Okie doke. Well, I can talk for England, but I'll I've jotted down some notes myself so that there should be some coherence in what I say.
Fine, okay.
Don't worry, John, we'll rein you in.
That's right. Well, we've been suffering this. The main problem was when we started, well, would people sort of be able to get talking? Well, in fact, the opposite was true.
I think it would probably
they can't
exactly
stop talking. Yeah. It's a Liverpool disease, I think. Anyway, I'll hand you over to Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, John. So, John, could you start by telling me your full name, your date of birth, and where you were born, please?
Yep, John Christopher Speller, S-P-E-L-L-E-R, mm-hmm. Born 10th of May 1949, mm-hmm. London.
Great. And can you tell me a little bit about your early life, your family, a little bit before you came to Blue Coat School, and obviously how you got there and stuff?
Yeah, sure. Yep. I went to the local primary school. I'm an only child. My father was a police sergeant and then became the bursar of an independent school.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a housewife.
Yep.
I went to the local primary school in Woodford Green, which is northwest London, Essex borders.
Yeah.
At that particular time, there was a dearth of grammar school places for boys, and so the Essex County Council bought places at the local independent schools. So I actually got a scholarship to Forest School in northeast London, mm-hmm. On a free scholarship paid for by Kent County by Essex County Council. I was there for obviously for my GCSE, my O levels and my A levels, and I ended up as head boy. I went to Durham University, where I did a degree in French with Spanish subsidiary.
Yep.
I also did my PGCE in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
First job was 72 to 76. I was an assistant teacher of modern languages and English at the Davenant Foundation Grammar School in Loughton, Essex. Davenant is spelled D-A-V-E-N-A-N-T. I then became head of modern languages at the Graham Park Comprehensive School in Colindale, which is northwest London.
Yeah.
I was there for 4 years. I then got a job in Basildon in Essex. I was there for about nearly 3 years. I was head of a pastoral head of years 10, 11, 12, and 13. I then became head of, so I became deputy head at the Ilford, that's I-L-F-O-R-D, County High School for Boys, which is the boys' grammar school in London Borough of Redbridge,
mm.
And I was there for 6 years.
Wow.
That takes me up to 1989, when I joined Blue Coat.
So what made you come up north to Liverpool, then? What attracted you?
I suppose the main thing is my wife's from the Wirral, and my father and mother-in-law lived on the Wirral as well. So it wasn't an area that was unfamiliar to me.
Okay.
My children were pretty young at the time, so we were in a position where we could move.
Yeah.
And the Blue Coat was the first one that offered me a job.
Right. How old were you when you came to Blue Coat?
I'd been 40. I actually got the job when I was 39, but I started when I was 40.
Right, okay. So you followed on from Peter Arnold Kraft, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
And
yep.
He was a towering presence, even just in the course of today, talking to various other former pupils and staff. His name keeps on coming up again and again. I take it he interviewed you, that would be the case?
No, he didn't interview me. I was interviewed by the governing body.
Right.
Ian Todd was the chair of governors at the time.
Yeah. So did you meet Peter Arnold Kraft?
Oh, yeah.
And what did you think?
Well, to be honest with you, he was fairly demob happy by the time I met him.
Mm.
So what he'd created was an exceptionally strong school.
Yeah.
I can tell you what my first impressions were, if you like.
Please do.
There were two very able, very experienced, and indeed very supportive deputy heads.
Yeah.
That's John Holt and Di Davis.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've had plenty of chats about, have you?
Indeed, yes. Their names
keep
coming up.
Okay. He'd also recruited an excellent team of professionals. teachers who weren't only very good in the classroom, but they were also highly committed to extracurricular activities, which is something which I was very keen on.
Yeah.
There were some very high quality extracurricular activities taking place.
Such as,
football was an obvious one.
Yeah.
But there was also basketball, swimming. Of course, Stephen Parry, Stephen Parry started about the same time as me. You know, he went on to win a silver Olympic medal.
Yeah.
In swimming, yeah.
Yeah.
There was Steve Parry there, who's one of our swimmers.
Yeah.
Particularly drama. Ian Preston, you presumably heard a lot about.
Well, I know him quite well, actually. He's still very much alive and kicking.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Wonderful fellow. Wonderful fellow. He used to put on this absolutely superb production every year.
Yeah.
I think we probably culminated in, I think it was 1995,
yeah.
when we put on Oliver,
yeah.
Which was a complete sellout,
yeah.
all five nights. In fact, there was even a black market operating to get tickets for that.
Really? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. The guy who played Fagin and the guy who played the Artful Dodger were both extremely good actors.
Yeah.
The lad who played Oliver was a member of the Liverpool Cathedral Choir.
Yeah.
We had a semi-pro singer who played Nancy,
yeah.
and all the top people in the orchestra, including a grade 8 violinist. Were in the backing, in the backing group, so to speak.
Mm.
It was a wonderful production, but they all were. But the only reason I mention Oliver is because it was a slight change from what Ian had been doing, which was pantomimes, which were also hugely successful and sellouts.
Yeah, mm. yeah, I gather that they were kind of legends in South Liverpool at the time.
Yeah, they were, and justifiably so. They were excellent, and I say there was no problem in selling the tickets at all.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I think that Arnold Craft managed to do, of course, was having created the reputation of the school, it certainly turned out to be very easy to recruit staff. The reputation of the school lured people in, and we were getting for an English post, for example, we would have 80 candidates.
Wow.
For a biology post, we had that sort of number. Even for physics, I remember we had 15 appointable candidates.
Wow. Incredible.
So it did make life, it made life actually quite easy for me.
So would you describe your years at Blue Coat as satisfying in a career-wise?
Oh, gracious me. Gracious me, yes. There were some challenges, which I can talk to you about.
What were the challenges?
Okay, When we started, I mean, the first thing I would say is that the decision to close the boarding house had been taken the previous year.
Right.
So, really, the boarding house was on its last legs. Di Davis ran it. There were about 30 boys.
Yeah.
Originally, I think Peter Arnold Craft had written to the Department of Education up in London to ask whether the school could have permission to close the boarding house.
Yeah.
That turned out to be totally unnecessary. In fact, they wrote back to me to say it's entirely up to you what you do.
Yeah.
And the boarding house faded away nicely in 1990.
Yeah.
The second and rather more urgent item was four forms of entry. You may remember that the local management of schools, having your own budget, was
yeah.
coming in gradually over the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And because Blue Coat had a lot of senior staff, a lot of well-paid staff, actually, it was incumbent, I think, upon the school to try to tap into economies of scale and increase the number of students.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think who actually said what initially. The Department of Education weren't opposed to us going to four forms of entry, but they weren't prepared to pay for anything.
Yeah.
Liverpool City Council were mostly concerned about having to pay for something. Once the governors agreed that they would finance the conversion of the South Block for classroom accommodation, then we were able to go ahead.
Yeah.
And four forms of entry was needed in order to help us with the budget. The buildings, of course, weren't ideal. The south block was a bit of a mess, but the conversion was successful, I think. The main school building was a bit tatty, but we managed anyway.
Yeah.
So that actually went pretty well in the end. There were some underlying issues as well. I mean, we're talking about challenges. There was a pretty tense relationship which I inherited with Liverpool City Council.
Yeah.
This obviously went back to the 1985 cease to maintain order. I didn't feel myself that having an antagonistic relationship with Liverpool City Council was of any benefit to the school at all.
No.
And so I made a point of striking up a good relationship, not only with Frank Cogley, who was the Director of Education at the time, but also with some of the potentially antagonistic councillors, such as Juliet Herzog or Gideon Ben-Tovin. And it worked out pretty well, actually. We had a good relationship and a live and let live relationship, I suppose.
How did you turn things around? How did you manage to get these people on side, or at least neutralise them?
Well, I think talking to them and being polite and seeing their point of view. In the end, I suppose the memory of the cease maintain order will have started to dissipate anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing that we did was I volunteered to hold the National Local Management of Schools Conference at Bluecoat School in since about 1991, which I think not only helped the reputation of the school, but also helped the relationship that we had with Liverpool City Council.
Yeah.
What one might have expected was that there were going to be strained relations with other schools.
Yeah.
I think when I arrived, the relationships with other schools were fairly neutral. I don't think the heads of the other schools had an awful lot to do with Peter Arnold-Craft, or Peter Arnold-Craft perhaps didn't have very much to do with them. Again, I made a point of going to all the heads' meetings, and I struck up good relationships with all the local heads. There were some issues, I suppose, from 1992 onwards. 1992 was when league tables were first published, may remember. Yeah?
Yeah.
At the time, Bluecoat School was nominally a comprehensive school. I'll come on to talking about changes of status from comprehensive to grammar later on, because that is something that sort of runs throughout my headship like wording through a stick of rock. Once the league table started to be published in 1992, I think, although on a personal level I had good relationships with the other heads, and indeed I think the school was well regarded by the local heads. Local heads found it a bit difficult to have their comprehensive schools compared in the league tables with the Bluecoat School.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So that, I think, started the movement that I'd thought from the start was going to be inevitable towards grammar school status.
Yeah.
Also in 1992, of course, we had the Ofsted inspection, one of those early Ofsted inspections where we were graded outstanding.
Yeah.
We had the whole of Wigan inspectorate with us for about a week or so. I suppose the main challenge which ran throughout the whole of my headship there was to do with the admissions criteria. Do you want me to talk about that?
Well, I know that Peter Arnold-Craft had no exam. He basically got potential students in with their parents. You brought in the entrance exam, is that correct?
Yeah, there was a lot of stages towards that. The students would come in with their parents. They would be interviewed by a couple of the senior members of staff. They'd be given a mark out of 20 for contribution to school life, at a mark out of 20 for some, I can't even remember what euphemism was used there, but basically it was how clever they were.
Yeah.
Now, that was sustainable at the time, but I say once the league tables came out, I think questions started to be asked about how comprehensive these criteria were.
Yeah.
In all honesty, they weren't. We were sort of crypto grammar school.
Yeah.
Now, how to deal with that? Well, the first thing was the fact that we. I'm just trying to think when it was. It must have been about 96 or so. It occurred to me that the best way of getting over this was to become grammar school.
Yeah.
In order to do that, the first stage really was to go for grant maintained status, which had already been tried a few years earlier, which hadn't been successful. I mean, I can tell you at a later stage if you want why I think that was the case. The second time, we had a very clear aim, and that was to get grant maintained status, because as under grant maintained status, you could then, at the time, apply to change your admission criteria.
Yeah.
On this occasion, the staff understood what the aim was and supported it. The parents understood as well, and we got the grant maintained status. We then applied to change from being a nominally comprehensive school into becoming a grammar school with an exam, and we managed to get the permission agreed by Gillian Shepherd, the minister at the time. It was about a month or so before the Conservative government fell.
Yeah.
We were lucky.
Yeah.
We got it agreed, completely under the radar. I've never seen any reference in any, because you know I live in a grammar school area down here. I've never seen any reference in any paper to the fact that Bluecoat changed from being a comprehensive to a grammar school
yeah.
in 1996-97.
Yeah.
It was non-controversial, but it was quite a long process, and it had been going on since I started. I mean, I knew in 1989 that the criteria for admission were likely to be dodgy.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased that we managed to achieve the grammar school status before I left.
So Bluecoat is very unusual, I guess, because of its age and the fact it starts off as a charity school. It's got trustees, it's got governors, there's the foundation.
Yep.
It seems there's a lot of people with sort of different management sort of ambitions. Did you find that difficult to keep them all going in the same direction?
Yeah, there were some tensions at times between some members of staff and some members of the governing body. I know that since I've left, it's resurfaced. This sort of thing has resurfaced from time to time. When I started, I wasn't really made. It wasn't really made clear to me what the relationship between the foundation and the overall governing body was. There were some strange people working in the school office whose position only became clear to me after a month or two, what they're actually doing there, because they were foundation employees rather than school employees.
As you say, I mean, even in recent year or two, the same sort of things have occurred.
I know, I appointed John Lem.
Oh, well, there you go. So,
I know all about that.
Particularly as we're so squeezed for space now as well.
Yeah.
Of course, as you're fully aware, the South Wing has been sold off, which I think they're desperately loved back, but there's no chance of that at all. So,
I came to to one of the reunions about 8 or 9 years ago, I think. I also came to the centenary in 2008. I've seen all the new buildings. Brilliant. They're very nice.
Yes, yeah, well, it's had changed the sort of look of the school. The whole north courtyard that's been added that you've seen, that's So the other thing I was going to ask that during your time, of course, girls were brought into the sixth form, weren't they?
Well, they were, that decision was made before I arrived.
Oh, was that?
The first batch of 20 girls arrived at the same time as me, actually. Quite a number of them were, had a sort of pioneer spirit about them. They certainly didn't need mollycoddling. I suppose the question I asked in the first year to others is, why have we got 20? Is there something special about the number 20? Nobody could tell me. But it did seem to me that if you kept the numbers very low, then the girls would like to become curiosities rather than fully fledged members of the school.
Presumably one of them, Kirsty Rowe, who is a teacher.
Oh, Kirsty, yeah. She was on the first batch.
She was with Gillian Stone, who I know quite well too. She said to me that she remembers the first day standing on the gallery in Shirley Hall and everybody just gawping at her like they were a bunch of aliens who'd landed from the planet Zod or something.
One of the early things I did, I think this was in the first year, 89-90, was to, I rang up the Department of Education to say, look, we've got 20 girls at the moment. Is 20 girls per year the maximum we can do? And the answer I got was, well, no, actually, as long as the number of girls does not exceed 10% of the total number in the school, then you can go up to that number, because anything less than 10% is not considered to be significant. So mathematically, that would suggest that you've taken 40 a year. That's what we did from then on. We were always hugely oversubscribed. In fact, interestingly, every year, when we were recruiting sixth formers from outside Blue Coat, the number of girls who applied outnumbered the boys 4-1. And it was almost always exactly 4-1, which was quite interesting.
Part of this sort of restructuring of the intake, was it your idea to start phasing them in through from year 7?
No. That occurred, that would have been under either Mr. Bell or under Sandy. When one of the last conversations I had with Peter Healy was to say that although we'd got the grammar school status, that I couldn't see that the school would be allowed to stay boys only with girls on the sixth form for very long, because there's quite clearly an imbalance of grammar school places in Liverpool then. And you'd have to have and girls, either one of the schools like St Hilda's would have to go grammar as well, or the Blue Coat School would have to take in girls. So that postdated me, that.
So one of the paradoxes, of course, was the school was co-educational, essentially two schools under one roof, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For most of its existence, it was like this 40-year period where due to education laws and changes and so on, that bus were out, that it went boys only school.
It was great having girls there, they integrated very well. We got some exceptional students from places like Tower College. Well, I don't know, I expect Tower College still supply quite a few, but in Rainhill.
I live in Rainhill, so I know all about
Tower College.
Still going. So, but what about the staff? Because, I mean, I have heard stories that some of the staff just simply could not cope with the girls. They just had no idea how to, even address the girls in their classes. Was that an issue?
Not that I'm aware of. I can't think of any anecdotes that would underpin that. I mean, they may have said that, but somebody may have said that. But I have to say, it was never raised in with me.
Right. I just remember one of the A-level music students told me this. I think it was David Holder. Never addressed the girl by her name. He simply didn't know how to.
that may well have been the case.
I know that's not a major issue, but it is quite a funny anecdote.
Well, David's a music teacher, and music teachers are always a little bit idiosyncratic anyway, aren't they? David was a wonderful colleague. He produced, when I was talking about extracurricular activities, I should have mentioned music. He produced wonderful music, and the choir, of course, once we had a healthy contingent of girls, the choir was wonderful. So I see. Yeah.
Given a new lease of life to, expanded the music department in a different direction.
Yes, I've seen that from the website, I'm very pleased to hear that the organ is still going well.
Oh yeah, I'm told it's twice as loud as it was, and it was. it got to the point where, because they refurbed Shirley Hall, and Mike Pennington, the head, said, "Well, we can't take it out because it's part of the English Heritage listing." So we basically. Luckily, long story short, as they now say, we did get the cast together, and it's just literally last week in half term they finally finished tuning it, so it's now going
forward. Oh, that's
but the
that's
great thing
great.
Is it's never been restored previously, so it still sounds like it was when it was first built in 1875. Nobody's ever tinkered with it. It's just kept going.
That's brilliant. Now, are you going to be on Northwest TV?
We've done it. Yeah, we've done that.
Yeah.
Well, luckily I've got two brilliant music students who I'm working with, and they're great front people, so I've pushed them out. We've been on TV three times, as well as, radio.
It was always us. We did quite a lot of TV in my time there as well, and quite a lot of radio as well.
What kind of things did you manage to get the TV interest in?
Well, we were used by Brookside. Brookside for the registry office. Yeah. We were used by a film company where the boardroom was used as a head teacher's office.
Oh yeah.
We had the Shirley Hall corridor was used for some filming.
Yeah.
And Ken Dodd came and did an advert for Jam Butties. with my one of my own children had to wear a chef's hat and toddle along holding a jam pot, which is the highlight when he was in year seven, the highlight of his school career.
That's where he peaked, was it?
Oh yeah, downhill ever since. we did a lot of that, and of course we're always often in the Liverpool Echo, often to do with things like the admissions criteria. I know, I've seen the articles. I've seen the articles. Twas ever that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, what has been very annoying for me, because I used to work on the Echo, the Post-Echo, for 17 years, was that when we launched the Auburn project, which had a lot of feel-good factors to do with it, particularly the sort of youth angle, getting young people interested in playing the organ and in a non-ecclesiastical setting, and the organ itself being so historic, was they just weren't interested. Controversial John Lamb and everything. It just went berserk.
And interestingly, of course, Luke Traynor, who's the is an old Blue Coat boy, isn't he?
He is indeed. Yes. So,
I think he was in sixth form when I started.
And as far as I know, I had a good time at school.
He was a bit of a star.
Well, he's just doing his job, but I appreciate that, having been a former journalist myself. But
you do.
Take our good stories as well as the bad was very annoying. Anyway.
You have to wait until your next lot of league tables come out.
Something like that, I don't know. So, well, that's been absolutely great. Anything else? Any other particular vivid memories?
I think I've covered the main things there, actually. I had Girls, First Impression, Politics, and I thought I must mention the admissions criteria. I suppose I've covered the main items, and
it's interesting what you say about the school still standing apart. There is still sort of I don't know the word resentment, but certainly we've had problems sort of finding. feed a primary school. There are plenty of
have
private,
you?
Private prep schools that would
really?
You know, get the kids into shape for the exam, but because we're outside the comprehensive system, there is still a resistance fairy from the primary school as to, you know, it's the old argument that blue coat's skimming off the bet. Taking those away from out of the comprehensive system.
I presume that you probably don't have quite the level of private tuition going on in Liverpool than we have down here in Kent.
Probably not, but I mean, there's a lot of ambitious parents who are very keen to get their children
yeah.
to blue coat. I'd say half the
Actually,
city, half the city seems to hate us, and the other half can't wait to get their kids into it. So
one thing,
because I think it's about 7 applications for every one place for year 7.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It used to be about 6. One thing I was going to mention about admissions, which I was just thinking about yesterday, actually. When I started, I don't know whether, I assume it's not the case now, but there was a certain disinclination on the parts of some people associated with the school to admit boys who were at Catholic primary schools.
I think that's completely gone by the board now. That's
good.
Because, in fact, as part of the project for the Orphan Restoration, which involved a lot of
yeah.
community projects, including this one, in fact, the very one that we're working on now,
yeah.
was to set up visits from primary schools, and I went to the head and said which are our target schools, and
yeah.
well, half of them were Catholic primary
Bishop
schools.
Eaton.
So that's entirely just
I mean, I wouldn't have any truck with that at all. I ignored that particular thing straight away, and indeed I discussed it with Bob Metcalf, who was then the vicar at Holy Trinity and obviously the chaplain to the school.
Yeah.
He of course ended up as the dean at Liverpool Cathedral.
That's right. Well, in fact, the director of music at the Catholic Cathedral, the Metropolitan, Chris McElroy, who has been a great ally of mine.
Oh,
Chris had been at Runnymede, I think, and but his parents couldn't afford the fees for St Edward's College, which was independent at the time. So he came to Blue Coat, which has been hugely to our benefit, I can tell you. He's also helped me set up and run the new community choir, which is another aspect of this project, which is my
passion. So
I'm pleased to say that kind of stuff has been.
Well, like I say, it was completely alien to me coming up from London. And I say I ignored it.
Good. So how long have you been at Blue Coat? When did you?
8 years.
How many, sorry?
8 years.
8 years. So where did you go to next?
Well, I became head at the Norton Matchball School, which is basically in the Ashford Grammar School for Boys in Kent, which is a larger school.
Yeah.
And interestingly, a few years into my headship, we started admitting girls into the sixth form as well. So I was able to use any information and learning that I'd acquired at Blue Coat in order to make it successful.
Right, that's great then. So I take you look back on your years at Blue Coat with satisfaction and pleasure.
Oh, indeed, yeah. I think it was a time of great change, actually.
Yeah.
When you think about it, when I was appointed, it was a 3-form entry comprehensive school with